In the matter of Crystal Point Condominium Association versus Kinsale Insurance Company, can we please have appearances of counsel?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Sean Mahoney. I'm a partner at the Kennedy's Law Firm, and I represent Petitioner Kinsale Insurance Company.
Good morning, Your
Honor. Go ahead, Kevin. Sorry.
No, Mr. Sawyer, you go first.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honors. Randy Sawyer from the law firm of Stark & Stark on behalf of the Crystal Point Condominium Association.
Good morning, Your Honors. Kayla Elizabeth Rowe on behalf of the Insurance Council of New Jersey and the New Jersey Civil Justice Institute.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Mahoney, please go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm prepared to proceed with a brief opening statement, followed by argument. And if it pleases the court, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. May I do
that? That's fine.
May I proceed? Thank you, Your Honor.
Please go ahead.
Today, this court has the opportunity to do two very important things. First, it has the opportunity to confirm the limited reach of our direct action statute. The statute's express and very specific terms indicate that it does not apply to architects and engineers' professional liability insurance matters involving alleged construction defects, as in this case. Second, this court also has a golden opportunity to reaffirm its longstanding and firm commitment to arbitration as a viable means of resolving commercial disputes. The direct action statute applies only to workers' compensation and personal injury matters and to property damage cases arising out of the use of motor vehicles or animals, none of which is involved in this case. This court's opportunity to confirm the scope of the direct action statute is a question of public importance that this court has not answered to date. In two non-precedential decisions, a panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, on the one hand, and a separate panel of the Appellate Division have each reached opposite conclusions with respect to this question. This court therefore has the opportunity today to confirm the direct action statute does one thing and one thing only. It grants third-party beneficiary standing to a specific but populous class of injured plaintiffs prescribed in the statute to seek relief directly from a defendant's insurer if the insured is insolvent or bankrupt. It does not do so for plaintiffs seeking to recover damages for purported construction defects and faulty workmanship under architects' and engineers' professional liability insurance policies, as we have here. This court therefore has an opportunity to confirm the limited scope of the direct action statute that the legislature intended. This court also has the opportunity to reaffirm its commitment to arbitration as a viable means of resolving commercial disputes. In 1981, in Barcon Associates Incorporated versus Tri-County Asphalt Corporation, this court stated as follows, quote, commercial arbitration is a long-established practice in New Jersey, consistently encouraged by the legislature. Even under 17th century colonial rule, arbitration was fostered by statute, reflecting public policy unchanged to the present day and embodied in the current Arbitration Act, end quote. The Appellate Division's decision in this matter is a radical departure from that public policy that will end up costing everyone more money if it is left to stand. The Appellate Division's decision eliminates private arbitration as an efficient and expedient means of resolving commercial disputes in a wide swath of commercial liability insurance coverage matters. The increase in projected litigation costs to insurers and policyholders likely to result from the Appellate Division's decision is very likely to increase the cost of liability insurance for everyone in New Jersey. The Appellate Division's decision is equally likely to increase substantially the caseload of New Jersey courts with numerous liability insurance coverage disputes that should have been resolved quickly and efficiently in private arbitration. We therefore submit that the Appellate Division's decision in this matter directly contravenes New Jersey's longstanding commitment to arbitration, it contravenes New Jersey judgment creditor law, and it contravenes established principles of equitable estoppel without having a sound basis to do so, and with far-reaching and detrimental consequences for New Jersey policyholders and insurers alike. This court consequently has the chance to implement a necessary course correction in a matter of significant public importance by confirming the limited reach of the direct action statute and reaffirming its commitment to commercial arbitration. Accordingly, this court should reverse the appellate division's decision and remand this matter back to the trial court with instructions to dismiss Crystal Point's complaint in favor of final and binding arbitration. We'll now proceed to argument with the court's permission.
Counselor, you're done with your opening statement?
I am, yes, Your Honor.
Can I ask you a question about the scope of the statute? Do you have a copy in front of you?
I do, Your Honor.
I'm going to read the first part of it and insert some numbers and then ask you what the first clause that I'll designate covers. The statute begins, no policy of insurance, one, against loss or damage resulting from accident, two, or injury suffered by an employee or other person, and for which the person insured is liable, or two, against loss or damage to property caused by animals or by any vehicle drawn, .. shall be issued or delivered in this state, .. The second clause applies to injuries caused by animals or vehicles. What does the first clause cover?
The first clause covers injury to natural persons in the workers' compensation and personal injury context. That's why
How do you get that from the language of the statute?
Because it says resulting from accident to or injury suffered by an employee or other person. A person there is another kind of, like an employee and an individual person is what we're talking about there. It's accident to or injury suffered by a natural person and for which that person, a person insured is liable. We have nothing like that in this case. This is not a workers' comp case. It's not a general liability case. It's not an auto liability case. This is an insurance coverage dispute over alleged construction defects caused by alleged breaches of professional liability. It's simply not the kind of case to which this statute applies.
Well, can someone suffer an injury from a construction defect? And I'm not talking necessarily a personal injury, an injury to cost as a result of having to entirely reconstruct a roof or a patio or a wall. Is that not an injury?
I don't think that that's a, I think that there can be a loss, but here we're talking about an accident or an injury suffered by an employee or other person. I think we're talking about bodily injury here. That's what this statute says.
I know you say you think, and that's the problem because the language is far from clear because we know that person is a corporation and you're assuming that some employee is inextricably linked to other person. Employees has got to be a natural person. Therefore, you conclude that other person has to be a natural person, but why does it have to follow? It just says other person.
It does, but I think if it says employee or other person and for which the person insured is liable, I think that follows because it doesn't make clear. It talks about an accident. A breach of professional liability or faulty workmanship is certainly not an accident. That's not the kind of case.
But it goes.
Or injury.
That wouldn't need injury if I accepted your argument resulting from an accident suffered by which. But it says an accident to, and it uses the disjunctive or injury.
It does, but it says, I think that the language says employee or other person. It links the word person to the word employee. I've never heard of necessarily a corporation being an employee. I think that the focus of this statute and that the specific class of persons that raise these kinds of concerns are people with bodily injury caused by individual natural persons with bodily injury, such as employees in the workers' compensation context, or auto accidents, or perhaps accidents covered by accidents.
Would you consider this a remedial statute? And if so, should we be construing the terms liberally to embrace coverage as wide as logically possible? Go ahead.
What this does, Your Honor, I think this statute has very specific language. It could have had, if the legislature intended this to apply to all types of policies and intended to cover all types of losses or all types of insurance policies, it could have said that, and it doesn't. It has something very specific here. It has a narrow, specific class of persons to which the statute applies. I think
But the narrowness appears to come
from the limiting words that you've added to the statute, like bodily injury, and a limited definition that you're providing for other person. Shouldn't we be reading the words of the statute in their plain and ordinary meaning?
I would agree that yes, it's certainly the plain and ordinary meaning of the statute that should govern here. But it is the plain language here that sets forth specific categories of persons to which the statute applies. It refers to the words are accident to or injury suffered by an employee or other person. I don't think that this contemplates a breach of professional liability causing construction defects with no injury to a natural person whatsoever. This is not a statute that applies to architects or engineers professional liability policies or breaches of professional liability that cause these kinds of construction defects. In fact, workers' compensation, auto liability, and general liability for bodily injury or property damage are actually each the subject of specific exclusions from coverage in these policies. In our view, the appellate division incorrectly reasoned that the direct action statute extends to other types of policies, even though the statute does not identify or mention any other types of policies. Actually, the specific types of policies identified in the direct action statute do indicate that the remedy was not prescribed for all policies.
And in fact, I'd like to ask you, Mr. Mahoney, about your arbitration argument. Now, you cite the FAA and the NJAA. Is your argument that if under the appellate division's decision, the arbitration provision is not enforced, but other aspects of this policy are enforced, that an arbitration clause is being disfavored in a manner that under the US Supreme Court's jurisprudence under the FAA is a violation of the FAA?
Yes, I would agree with that. I think that to hold otherwise, to let the appellate division's decision stand, that would be tantamount to rejecting arbitration as a viable means of resolving commercial disputes. Your Honor, you were going to say.
So just to drill down a little bit on that, it seems to me that Crystal Point wants to obviously get coverage under this policy and stand in the shoes of the insured as a third party beneficiary, but does not want to be bound by the arbitration clause. Am I correct in characterizing what the argument is on your adversary's part?
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that.
And I know you say that violates the FAA and the NJAA, but with respect to the FAA specifically, because the jurisprudence is quite detailed from the Supreme Court on the FAA, is your argument that that is a disfavoring of some provisions over others, that disfavors arbitration, doesn't treat it as any other contract provision, and therefore violates the FAA?
Yes, it is. The FAA provides that arbitration agreements are enforceable as they would be enforceable under state contract law. And here, under state contract law, it would be principles of equitable estoppel under New Jersey law that should prevent Crystal Point from cherry-picking which provisions in the Kinsale policies it favors and which ones it wants to
enforce. Isn't your argument just simple? Look at the statute. The statute uses the language under the terms of the policy. I thought that's your argument. Look at the statute. It says you're bound by the policy, you're bound by the policy limits, and you're bound by all the terms of the policy. One of the terms of the policy happens to be arbitration.
That's absolutely correct.
I mean, your strongest argument is just a simple statutory interpretation and not a policy argument. That's what the statute says. Am I correct?
That is correct. Yes, if we're talking about the direct action statute, absolutely. The argument says that any such proceeding shall be brought under the terms of the policy. The purpose of that is to confine the claimant's claims to the contract provisions in the policy. The arbitration agreement has to be treated just as equally as all of the other terms, limitations, exclusions that are in the policy. And there's no sound reason why Crystal Point should be able to reject that and reject that part of the policy, that part of the contract, but embrace the full contractual benefit of the policy when it wants to seek all of the coverage subject to all of the limits of the policy.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. Your first argument is that the direct, this direct action statute doesn't apply. That's number one, correct? Correct.
Yes.
So my question to you is, if this statute did not apply, is there a common law argument that Crystal Point is the third party beneficiary under the common law and would be able to proceed?
If
even in the absence of the statute.
If Crystal Point, if Crystal Point obtained an assignment from Nakamuli or Hawk, it could proceed potentially against Kinsale. As a judgment creditor, it may have an argument that if it were a third party beneficiary, if its claim arises out of the contract itself, and that's it's embracing the full benefit of the contract that it seeks to recover for indemnity coverage for each of its judgments, at best it would have to claim that it's a third party beneficiary under the agreements. And that would have to be the vehicle. But New Jersey law is very clear that if you are a third party beneficiary of the contract, you are bound by all the restrictions of the contracts as well. That includes the arbitration provisions just as much as it includes the exclusions, the limitations to coverage, the limits of liability, et cetera. So in all events, Crystal Point would have to arbitrate its claim against
your argument is, no matter how you slice it, statute, common law, you're standing in the shoes of the insured and you are not entitled to any better.
Yes, that is exactly
better terms right. than the insured would have had against the insurer.
That's exactly right. That's consistent with judgment creditor law, which we've explained in our briefs, where a judgment creditor stands squarely in the shoes of the insured. The insurer has all the rights and defenses against the insured that against the third party claimant as it would against the insured and vice versa. The third party claimant would have at best whatever rights, but no more that the contract requires.
Yeah, is the statute actually necessary here in the standard personal injury lawsuit? The plaintiff sues the defendant, but the insurance carrier stands to under the insurance contract to pay the judgment. So do you really need the statute here? You sue the named defendant, and your carrier stands in the shoes of the defendant for purposes of recovery. That's standard every personal injury case, every property damage case. Is there any need to go all the way to the statute?
Well, I don't think there's any need to look at the statute. We're only looking at the statute because Crystal Point has cited it as a potential basis to override the arbitration provisions. It was never cited in the original complaint filed in the trial court. And here, I think, no matter, as I had argued previously, no matter which way you slice this, they have to go to arbitration over this. It doesn't matter what the vehicle is. You could be a third-party beneficiary. They could be an assignee of the insured. You could proceed, even if the direct action statute applied to this kind of case, you'd still have to arbitrate this claim against Kinsale. And there's no
related to Justice Fernandez-Vina's question, one of the curious things to me in looking at this statute, which has received very little judicial attention over the years, is if this really does apply, let's take your argument that it's limited to animals and motor vehicles. Well, since the statute was enacted, let's leave aside animal accidents for the moment and talk about motor vehicles. There are obviously millions of motor vehicles on the road and over the years, hundreds of thousands of accidents that could have been covered here. And then obviously a subset of those, but a substantial subset will be insolvent insureds. So my overall question here, not really directly going to your argument, but why is there so little attention to this? And perhaps the answer is found in Justice Fernandez-Vina's question, which is that the if it applies, the direct action statute is superfluous because of the way in which judgment creditors are treated in insolvency situations under other law. See what I'm saying? How could the statute exist for going on 90 years, I guess, and barely touched by, barely litigated, rarely even any attention from judges anywhere, unless it's has really been ultimately displaced for to in large measure by subsequent events in the common law and other statutes that obviously govern.
Yes, sorry, Your Honor, go ahead.
Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Yes, no, I would agree. I think the lack or the dearth of case law on the direct action statute is indicative of its limited applicability. I think that it's indicative of the understanding that it is limited in scope, potentially superseded by common law remedies, if there are any, or other circumstances not present here in this case. Most of the cases that have discussed it have really applied it in auto accident cases. That's where it typically comes up. In fact—
But not even that very often. Obviously, you know, we see the statutes that govern auto accident cases, obviously an insurance in auto accident cases, PIP being the most prominent, are litigated and every detail and nuance is eventually worked out through interpretations or through legislative action. But this direct action statute, sort of the grandpa of all of them, obviously a very long time ago, seems to be ignored even in the motor vehicle setting that you are arguing is one of only two settings in which it applies. So maybe it is really superfluous to other laws that apply to the extent that it applies.
It very well may be, I think. But what we have here, as I said, I think that the limited case law might indicate that it is somewhat superfluous to other remedies. But what we're dealing with here is, what does it actually say and what kinds of cases does it apply to? There is a specific limited list of the kinds of policies to which it applies. And it's just simply not the one that we have here. And in any event, what's more important here, I think, is that even if it did apply, there is no sound basis for the appellate division's reasoning that this should override the arbitration clauses of the policies.
Crystal, can I ask you one question about arbitration? Just to be clear, we're just talking about coverage, not about a liability action between the plaintiff and if the insurance company was substituted and the insurance company. We're just talking about whether or not the insurance company is liable to have covered the insured, correct?
That's correct. Yes, we're talking, that's the scope of the arbitration clauses here. And I would add that I think that as a threshold matter, I think it should be undisputed between the parties here, and it should be clear that but for Crystal Point's challenge to the arbitration clauses based on the direct action statute, the breach of contract and coverage claims that it has asserted in this matter clearly fall within the purview of the arbitration agreement. It applies to all coverage disputes under the policy and any rights afforded by the policy. So that's what we're talking about here. These are Crystal Point's claims for indemnity coverage for judgments it has obtained against its insurers. And Crystal Point has never actually demonstrated that it could not obtain all the relief it seeks in arbitration against Kinsale. Crystal Point has never criticized the arbitration process outlined in the Kinsale policies. Crystal Point has never demonstrated that proceeding in arbitration was Yes, Your Honor.
I just want to make sure I understand as a follow-up to Justice Albin's question. Your invocation of the arbitration clause is to determine whether the plaintiff's claims are covered under the policy. If that's determined that the plaintiff's claims are covered under the policy, whether or not the plaintiff is liable, the defendant is liable, that would be a jury trial.
I think that would be subject of arbitration. That would be resolved by a panel in arbitration to determine whether Kinsale owes any indemnity coverage to Crystal Point for the judgments that it wants to have reimbursed.
Why should that be covered under arbitration if the insured was still viable company? It would have been sued by the plaintiff, and let's assume that there was no arbitration provision between your insured and the plaintiff in this case. They would be tried in a court before a jury, and if they would be fined liable, wouldn't your company be responsible for the up to the limits of the policy?
If coverage existed, then we would be responsible for the judgment up to the limits of the policy, number one.
Right.
But number two, in this case, that question has to be resolved in binding and private arbitration because that's what the contracts provide.
The question for coverage.
Yes, whether coverage, yes, whether Kinsale must provide coverage for the judgments at issue here is, that's the only question here, I think, in this case that Crystal Point has asserted against Kinsale here, and that absolutely has to be subject to the arbitration clauses in the policy.
Because there's a default situation here, right? Is that because there's a default?
There is a default situation. Crystal Point apparently obtained default judgments, as I understand it, against the insurers. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so any question as to the liability of the insured is subject to a default judgment. So there's not going to be a jury trial about that. That's kind of a done deal at this point.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. We're not talking about, we're not litigating any longer. In this case, we are not litigating the insured's liability to Crystal Point. That's been settled because they're a default judgment.
Okay. So you're not arguing. You're not going to argue that if an arbitrator finds that there is coverage, I'm responsible for these two, I'll call them insolvents, that now I have, since I'm on the hook, I have a right to be heard. I'm an independent party. You're prepared to pay the judgment. That's what you're saying? I want to be clear about this.
We're saying that in arbitration, the only question will be whether Kinsale has to provide coverage for the judgments at issue. I think that the liability of the insured has been decided. There are judgments against the insured at this point. But in arbitration, as I was saying, there's no reason why that process couldn't afford Crystal Point all the relief it seeks on that question. It would have a full and fair opportunity to present whatever evidence it wants to present to make an argument that coverage exists, as we would to argue that coverage does not. So there's been no demonstration, and Crystal Point has never argued that somehow the arbitration process is unfair or would deprive it of some meaningful opportunity to make its case. So that's one of the reasons why the circumstances of this case do not warrant any departure from this court's commitment to enforcing arbitration provisions to resolve commercial arbitration disputes.
I'm sorry, Chief, go ahead, please.
You're relying heavily on the language in the policy that says all disputes over coverage are resolved through arbitration. No?
Yes, I am. Yes, that's correct.
May I take you back to the first question, the scope of the statute? Are you familiar with a case, Bird versus Sussex Mutual Insurance Company?
Yes, I am.
That involved neither injury from a vehicle, from an animal,
or a workers' comp type situation, yet the court offered language about claimants' interests being derivative of the insurers. What do you take from the court's interpretation of the statute and dicta in that case?
Well, I think that it is, in all events, as applied to this case, Crystal Point's interests are derivative of the insurers. It is limited by whatever the insured's interest was under the statute. It's no greater or no less than what the insured's had. And the court doesn't write a better contract for the insureds than the one that is at issue, that has already been the one that's in place. So I think that the import of that is that Crystal Point, whatever cause of action it might have against Kinsale for coverage for these indemnity judgments, is going to be subject to the four corners of the insurance contracts at issue. And those four corners include the arbitration provisions, which is why Kinsale and Crystal Point have to arbitrate these claims to resolve them.
If your interpretation of the statute is correct, though, then the court had no reason
to touch upon the scope of the statute because it didn't fall within the three buckets that you outlined for us, which you believe the statute is limited to. So again, I ask,
what do you make of the court's language about the statute outside of the areas which you have articulated is all that the statute covers?
Well, in that case, I think in this, it is dicta. It's not something that was essential to the court's holding, as I recall, from Bird v. Sussex Mutual. But I don't think that it's necessarily, there hasn't been any binding precedent either from this court or from the appellate division. The best other example of that we have is the Ferguson versus Travelers Indemnity Company in 2014, which applied this statute, held that this statute applied to an E&O liability policy for broker malpractice. But in either case, I don't think the plain language of the statute in both cases doesn't extend to that case, either of those two cases or to this case as well.
So you give the language in Byrd no meaning at all, the Supreme Court's language from 1970. Is that fair?
Well, I think that it's not the right answer for this case because it's not what the statute says. The statute here has a specific list of policies to which it applies.
I'm trying to figure out why you're arguing so hard at this point for this reason, because you seem to acknowledge that you're going to get to the same place whether or not you apply the statute or you apply the common law. You're going to get to your arbitration. You're going to say a claimant's interest is derivative of the insured's, which is what Byrd said, and which is what the common law says. You wind up in the same place.
Yes, I agree. That's exactly right. I agree that that's no matter how you slice this, you end up in arbitration, no matter what the vehicle is, whether it's the statute or outside of it. Even if Byrd v. Sussex Mutual has language suggesting the statute might have broader impact, or a broader purview than the one we're suggesting here, it doesn't change what the outcome.
I'm raising this because I'm wondering why you're resisting so hard the Chief Justice's proposed interpretation. That's why I'm asking that. You're winding up in the same place anyway.
Yes, no, I agree. We should wind up in the same place. And that's the most salient point here, that no matter what the outcome is or what the vehicle is, this case belongs in arbitration. The trial court was correct to dismiss Crystal Point's complaint. It doesn't matter whether the statute is the vehicle, a common law remedy is the vehicle, or otherwise. In all events, Crystal Point's rights, if any, under the policy are derivative of the insured's. Byrd v. Sussex Mutual says that. And judgment creditor law in New Jersey is consistent with that. That includes the arbitration provisions just as much as it includes the terms or other exclusions and limitations of the policy. And equitable estoppel should prevent Crystal Point from selecting which provisions of the policy it wants, that it likes, that might get it coverage, and then disregarding other provisions like the arbitration provisions. And I think that the direct action statute, the appellate division's decision, its attempt to create this new exception to the enforceability of arbitration provisions, as I mentioned in my opening statement, is actually likely to harm everyone in New Jersey, both policyholders and insurers alike. I think both are going to end up paying more money. The court's decision is likely to affect thousands of liability insurance policies already issued in New Jersey. The sudden rejection of longstanding enforcement of arbitration provisions is likely to cause insurers to anticipate greater litigation costs when issuing insurance policies, because arbitration is often more efficient than proceeding in court. That in turn is going to increase the cost of liability insurance for New Jersey policyholders. Therefore, we submit that the court should not endorse the appellate division's new and substantial departure from this court's settled commitment to enforcing commercial arbitration provisions. So I think that the appellate division's decision in this matter, unfortunately, departs from several settled principles of New Jersey law discussed today.
You know, arbitration is really very typical in coverage disputes. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. It's commonplace at this point. I think, and probably because of the number of disputes over liability insurance policies that arise, it creates a very efficient and expedient mechanism for both the insurers and the policyholders to resolve those matters quickly and expediently. And there's no reason why that wouldn't work to Crystal Point's benefit here. Frankly, if Crystal Point...
Your other argument regarding the scope of the statute really would only be material, as I understand it, tell me if I'm wrong, in a case with no arbitration clause.
Yes, it does. Right? Yes. Honestly, if you agree, we get to the same place. If this court agrees that this matter belongs in arbitration, irrespective of whether direct action statute applies to this kind of case, then the appellate division's decision should be vacated and this matter should be dismissed in favor of arbitration.
And I'm assuming your client has an arbitration clause in every one of its policies.
I have done a lot of work for my client over many years, and I have not seen a policy yet that does not have this binding arbitration endorsement in it. And they're not the only insurer that has that.
Could that explain the question that was batted around earlier, why there are so few cases interpreting the statute?
It's very possible that that's the case. If most of these issues are resolved outside of court because of arbitration agreements in more efficient settings, pretty expediently, that may very well be a reason why this hasn't been batted around in New Jersey courts over the last 50 or 60 years. But here, I think the appellate division has essentially blue penciled the insurance contracts in this case to eliminate the arbitration provisions. That's inconsistent with this court's commitment to commercial arbitration. It also is inconsistent with more than 50 years of judgment creditor law, which mandate that Crystal Point should have no greater rights than the insureds under the policies here. And it ignores what I would submit are established principles of equitable estoppel that are supposed to prevent the kind of gamesmanship, as the Third Circuit put it in FlexiVan, by a third party claimant and cherry picking what it likes about the contracts and what it doesn't like about the contracts, but at the same time, simultaneously embracing the entire contract to seek the full contractual benefit of the policies. Accordingly, we think this court should conclude that the direct action statute could conclude that it's inapplicable to this case, but even if it does apply, we get to the same place. Crystal Point is bound by the arbitration provisions of the policies. We'd also request that the court grant Kinsale's pending motion in this court to stay this matter pending the court's decision as to the arbitrability of Crystal Point's contractual coverage claims. A trial has been scheduled in the trial court for February 22nd, 2022. As we've explained in our motion, a stay of this matter until the court determines whether this dispute belongs in arbitration, we think is appropriate to avoid a waste of resources by the parties and the trial court. Unless the court has any further questions for me, I will conclude my argument.